Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network, a station dedicated to the concept that all manifestations of the divine are equally valid. Join Reverend Terry Power HP, Robin McKean, and all the hosts for programming covering a wide range of spiritual topics, right here on Blog Talk Radio.
A safe place where we have the freedom to think about life without judgment. We take a look at society, we examine it, and we allow for the possibility of something new, something different. And now, here's your host, Alan Ritter.
Welcome, everybody, to this almost last show in July of 2017, this show being on July the 23rd. And as always, it's a little bit past 9 p.m. in the evening, getting ready to settle down for Sunday night, getting ready to start the week, or in my case, you know, I sort of look at this as the start of my week, getting prepared for this program, getting ready to talk to you all who listen live and everyone who listens after the live program, regardless of what time of day you listen. So in the last week, it was interesting. I was at a movie showing that was part of a Green Festival set of movies in the little town that I live in Collingswood, New Jersey. And I'm part of the Next Town Over Oakland Green Team, which is basically a team that's looking to do some green initiatives. It's actually hooked into the government a little bit. And I was kind of surprised when I initially joined their organization that they actually do things. And the town is actually receptive to getting input. And actually has a member of council sitting on this team to field ideas. So there's actually input going in, and that some of the things that we've done, which are small in scale, like I deliver, pick up and deliver coffee grounds from one place to another, and also ferry my compost from my produce business over to a collection point, which happens to be somebody's house in the other town, Oakland, New Jersey. So it's a pretty interesting thing to be involved in. I've come to be sort of a skeptic of government, very skeptical, seeing, you know, where the higher tiers of government come from, but it's been an interesting journey so far, and I'm supposed to look at it and get to a certain point or just continue on with it. But I was at that movie, and it was actually a permaculture movie, and it was a lot of different bits and pieces of a lot of, I guess you would call them vignettes, subjects, and then they would move to the next subject, and it was sort of encapsulated overall in the idea of where do we go next. And last week's program on an emerging forest on this show was okay, we're done. To a certain level, we've done our due diligence, or since I'm the person presenting this program, I've done my due diligence to a level where I can see that there's a divergence between where I want to go and where the mass society wants to go. So what do I do about that? So I was at this movie, and it was interesting. Me, someone who would rather stay home, actually getting out and being rewarded with some intellectual stimulation from the movie, seeing some things in the movie that I sort of expected to see, a lot of actors playing roles, controlling the dialogue, so to speak, making false dialogue, which is another thing that actors do, proposing, you know, balloons of ideas, saying, oh, this might work, or actually demonstrating that it does work, when it's not really a forward-looking thing, and realizing how close that is to the grassroots, realizing where these people really are. They're really close to the grassroots, as well as being higher echelon, of course. But it's really a program of dialogue control that's very well invested. And of course it would be, because this program of dialogue control, this program of social control, has been going on for many thousands of years. It's actually part of the culture. And it's something that I've come to recognize as being part of the culture. So while I was at this movie, they were introducing various concepts, and one of the concepts they introduced was Keystone Species. And I had a little internal chuckle, because when I was introduced to the Keystone Species, and maybe many of you were introduced to the Keystone Species, it was always an ego thing, and it was always man is the Keystone Species, because man is the top of the pyramid, the supporter. And let me read you the definition, or a definition that I found was appropriate for the Keystone Species. Keystone Species is a species upon which others in an ecosystem largely depend, such that if it were removed, the ecosystem would change drastically. So we certainly have I certainly have my childhood introduced in elementary school and high school definition that the Keystone Species is man. But maybe we can take a second or third look at the definition. And the first part of the definition is a species that all others in the ecosystem depend on, a species upon which others in the ecosystem largely depend. Okay, that's the first part. So there's a large, very large dependence of other species in the ecosystem on the Keystone Species. And I don't think there's any dependence of other species on the presence of man. So if man disappeared, the other species would probably have more of what they need, not less of what they need. That really knocks out man as being a keystone species. And then the second part is such that if it were removed, the ecosystem would change drastically. Now, I think if man were removed, the ecosystem would change drastically, but there isn't the reliance on man, and there would be a rebound of other species. There wouldn't be a decrease in other species. So just having a second look at what the Keystone Species is, I don't really think that it's suited to be classified as being man. And when I was first struck with this, I think everybody in the audience knows species or general type of creature I immediately thought of as being the species upon which others in an ecosystem largely depend, such that if it were removed, the ecosystem would change drastically. Well, it is being removed by man, and the ecosystem is changing drastically as a result. I'm here in southern New Jersey, just across the river from Philadelphia. It was 101 2 days ago, and now it's raining lightly, and it's 72. And the species that transports water, the species that holds soil, the species that creates the leaf litter so that soil can begin, the species that can plug itself into bare rock and begin from there, eating nothing else, trees. And I'll just say generally trees to begin with. And as I just summarize, you can look at trees as being the makers and holders of soil, the breakers of rock, the pumpers of water and makers of rain. And I'm still so fascinated by, as much as I know about trees, and there's much more that I don't know about trees, but their ability and their function, or one of their many, many functions that actually takes water up from the ground as part of their natural course of business and pumps it out at the top. And because they do, water can make it past it, water can make it into the clouds past the approximately 150 miles from a coastline that water would make it would be transported just by wave action, making the aerosol that's made at the coast and pumping water just by physical smashing of waves. That puts a certain amount of air, of water, into the atmosphere. And every single tree that takes water up thereafter also replenishes the water content in the atmosphere and in the clouds. So it's a constant replenishment of the water that's being transported across vast continents, and that's how the water gets to the other side of the continent, because the water falls after a certain point, and it has to get replenished. So it gets replenished by trees. So when I was preparing for the program, I thought, okay, trees, but maybe we can go broader still to include, as the keystone species, something else that is being reduced drastically, which is all photosynthetic plants. But looking at all photosynthetic plants, you get into many, many shallow root plants and like grasses, etc., and they don't pump. They're not a physical pumping mechanism. They're a smaller pumping mechanism, but they're not this robust pumping tube that literally reaches, you know, could be to great depths in the soil. I mean, a blade of grass doesn't reach into great depths in the soil, the volume of water that a tree does. So as far as broadening my what I'm going to discuss as the keystone species, I first, you know, defined it as trees, and then I thought, okay, should I go broader still to consider all photosynthetic plants? And then I said, no, I think I think from my discussion here that the pumper and the creature that can start on bare rock and starts on bare rock is the tree, because many of those photosynthetic plants need the soil that trees have already started, or that trees in the progression of plants after trees have already started. So there's this synthetic man, or what I am calling tonight this quote, no nature man, unquote, who thinks that he, and I'm using the he as a conversational device, I'm meaning no nature man, asexual, and I'm meaning he asexual as well, just pointing out the individual or the collective group, no nature man, acts like he can separate his existence from trees. Acts like he doesn't have a connection. No nature man acts like he can make oxygen from carbon dioxide without waste. Acts like nature, and specifically trees, aren't part of him, aren't part of his system. And as I've sort of motivated in past experience, in past shows, when I talk about the breath going out, and I talk about the limits of our body, and I talk about if you consider your body to be healthy and you wish to bring into it healthy food, your body includes the food. Your body includes the breaths that you bring into it. So if you breathe out and then you breathe in, all of the places that the breathe-in breath came from, and all of the places that your cucumbers and strawberries and red potatoes and apples, you can see I'm sitting in front of my menu board from the produce club for last week, so I have like a menu that I can read from, so I can get good cues from that. All of those items are literally going to become part of your body, so literally they are part of your body. So for no nature man to act like, oh, he's limited to his body, or there's some inability to connect himself to where his body really is, or he thinks that removing the vast majority of trees in an area won't affect his lifestyle, or removing the vast majority of trees and just cutting them down where photosynthesis is maximized in the jungles of the world to produce oxygen for the space, the space that we interact in, he acts like that has no consequences, like that does not have an impact. And the funny thing is that no nature man, this conversational device, acts like he has a handle on high technology, like that of a tree. And I think I've gotten to the point where I'm not sure exactly what goes on in the heads of people like this, or in the heads of elite or guiding forces, or maybe the original guiding force. But I think that no nature man possibly was embarrassed by his fiddly devices every time he eats an apple, because an apple is so clean It's the apple's growth process as a tree provides so many, many resources and does so many, many things. And then, oh, here's an apple for you. And man makes these fiddly devices, or no nature man makes these fiddly devices, and you know, just turns up his nose or scoffs at the magnificence of the apple tree. And maybe that embarrassment is because he can never seem to get close to such an accomplishment. But what's more interesting is he doesn't even want to try. He doesn't even want to put forth the effort. He doesn't want to say, I don't know, I'm ignorant. He has an inability to work at the feet of others who may know, or to work at the feet of the forest. And I think because it's such a huge gulf in understanding that no nature man has just said, oh, I can't possibly learn all of that in my lifetime. It's impossible. And because it's impossible, it's created anger and hate and disgust. Mostly it's disgust inwardly, but how disgust inwardly is seen is with rebellion, and it's rebellion against this vast amount of abundance, this vast amount of this actual infinite pool of fertility. And a little summary on the infinite pool of fertility, and what I mean by that is every time you improve the fertility available to biology, it will improve its output. So if you improve the mineral providing to a plant, it will improve possibly its leaf strength, possibly its bark strength, possibly its transport of minerals or nutrients to itself, possibly its transport of water. It's going to improve something. So that if you go around with a cycle, or you go around with year after year of nurturing a tree, and you provide it with more and more and better items, or just improving its fungi network, or in introducing new and different fungi, its fertility will increase and increase and increase. But then there's even a demarcation where the soil that has been put down is too rich for that plant, and that plant will actually make way for a newer species. I'm not saying a completely new species, but some plants can only, some plants like grapes only grow in a lower grade soil, where some other plants like raspberries only grow in an extremely fertile environment, like the most fertile environment. But then beyond that, when you get into a climax forest, how far can you push the climax forest before it actually springs forth species that it actually creates fertility conditions that are so high that the next species is actually created, and the fertility of the fruit becomes much higher than we're used to. So this is the infinite pool of, or the very, very deep pool of fertility that I'm talking about, that it's actually been rebelled against. And it's been rebelled against by paving it over in red and white and black stone, which we see as cities, which we see as highways and concrete and malls and things like that, which actually is the barrier between the soil, which would like to be growing things, and the sky. So there's actually a prison, there's actually a rebellion by No Nature Man against the fertility, and literally it's sort of a child's hate response. I mean, it's so young, it's a child's hate response to not being able to see the master's work, or saying I could never achieve that just because it's been analyzed by that person or by those persons, and they can't achieve it in one lifetime. So they give up. And that's pretty interesting to me, that they would give up after such a short period of time. So at this point, I'm going to take the break, and I'll be back on the other side to keep going. And I hope you'll stick around. Talk to you in a few. The song is, of course, Star of the Bard, Green and Gray.
You fell from heaven, and you fell from grace. You want dominion over this place. The piper smiled to the priest, he said, I was lord of animals, the wild hunt I led, until your God came here and with his jealous hand, it was he who wanted dominion over this land. For I'm no devil. Said if evil is where it lies in the hearts of man, but you lead us, oh, you tempt us to rape, to steal, to kill. The piper said, whatever happened to free will? Then the grove lay empty, the priest told no one, the blossom lay upon the thorn, and the piper's tune was done. And in the sunlit forest, the animals they bow, as the piper laid his goddess down. For I'm no devil, I'm father to the land. I have been here since the earth began, neither black nor
to International Pagan Radio. You can hear your favorite artists such as Dave the Bard, Tuatha Dea, Spiral Rhythm, S.J. Tucker, Murphy's Midnight Rounders, and many, many more. Join us for exciting shows like Ask a Witch and Storytime with Rook as well. www.internationalpaganradio.com on the net or on TuneIn Radio on your mobile devices. Join us on Facebook and Twitter too. International Pagan Radio, all pagan, all the time.
Welcome back to An Emerging Forest on the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. We hope everyone was able to stretch their legs and get a drink. And now, back to Alan.
Well, welcome back. Hope you had a great break. So before the break, I was talking about where possibly the disconnect came from, or what was the motivation of just looking at the forest and saying, me no want, or I don't understand, therefore, or I can't achieve that. in my single life view. And of course, you've probably listened to some of my previous programs, and I think we are here for more than one life, so that if you have faith in your or if you just look at the problem and you say, well, that's going to take more than one life to learn, I must be going to be here for more than one life, and just instead of throwing your hands up. So even though I said, I used a word, and I used the word that I used was, it's this childish hate response. And when I was at the break, I was looking at that and thinking about that, and I need to come back to that because that's actually judgmental. And I believe that at one point or another, we've all been through this, or we've all had that response. We've all had that rebellion on a small scale or a large scale. So it is a point of evolution. It is natural. So I don't want to point that out and say that it is not an allowed psychology. I don't want to judge that psychology. That is part of the overall discovery. Comparing your discovery to where your level of achievement is and then getting upset about it, or then over many, many discoveries and many, many beings upset, you begin to understand that that's just part of life and that you're going to see wide gulfs in achievement between people who've worked on it for many, or beings who've worked on it for, in this case, hundreds of thousands of lives, and you come in the door and you're like, well, gee, I feel like a fool. Of course, you should. You shouldn't feel like a fool. You should just say, oh, gee, another new adventure to take on. And it also, this hate response or this rebellion points out not only this instance, but it points out where the development of the continual cycle of discovery and learning is. It's pretty early on, otherwise you would have overcome this short-term life cycle viewpoint, and you would have taken on the long-term, long or eternal soul viewpoint, if you wish to, in order to say, how am I going to overcome this problem? I'm going to be back and work on it again, maybe not sequentially, maybe out of sequence. And so what one could look at, what is the psychology that is going on here, and say, well, instead of pulling up a chair or literally sitting down on the leafy forest floor, we've got the white and black and red stone prison. And the continual destruction of the forests, literally, that the human species needs in order to breathe. So, in general, there's the schoolroom, there's the leafy forest floor, there's nature ready to receive disciples, or not even such that it's ready to receive disciples. Maybe you don't even want to study at it, but just with an extremely journeyman level of understanding, you can grow more food than and have more oxygen in the atmosphere than we can possibly deal with. It's interesting to understand that below 35% oxygen, we have to take oxygen into our lungs. But at over 35% atmospheric oxygen, we don't need to do that as much. It just goes directly into the plasma. It's not necessary that the alveoli in our lungs force it in. So there are these levels in change in the human body's function as a result of fertility increase that we do know about, and that there are many other ones that we don't know about. So we don't know what our overall species morphing capability is with the result of increasing in fertility, and we don't know what our individual morphing capability is as a result of increases and or decreases in fertility. Certainly, we're going to have systems that are going to shut down as we decrease in fertility, and I just mentioned one. It's pretty interesting stuff. So, of course, and as I've discussed in previous programs, if everybody had enough, if everybody had so much more than enough, and if everybody was having their needs met and their dreams cultivated and we were on the fertility path, you wouldn't be able to have centralized government and you wouldn't be able to have power of the few. And that's another point of the present, powers that be psychology that is interesting to observe. It's not judging them. It's just saying, where are they at? What are they doing? So their thoughts are that wealth and knowledge come from theft and fraud. They might not think exactly that. They might just think that our continuation in power requires us to keep our garden in the way we presently keep it, to farm in the way we presently farm, because if we farmed in a different way that was more conducive to fertility, there wouldn't be any reason for centralized government. There wouldn't be any reason for the continuing saga of disaster and war and pestilence and fear that we provide, because no one would pay attention to us if they had enough to eat every day and a warm place to sleep. So what happens is, or where we are, what has happened, not digging into it too deeply, is there's a whole culture whose work tasks, whose job descriptions are created by this violent temper tantrum against nature and against that long-term hard task of starting to skill up about how to use abundance forevermore to just improve your life. There's a void in there, or there's a disconnect. So every single task that we've got here is more or less anti-nature, because the entire culture is a violent, or mostly violent, rejection of what nature offers, and graphically an imprisonment of nature and a destruction of nature. So all of the jobs that you see and all of the jobs that are rewarded by paper money, the illusion of wealth, are jobs that are created that are out of sync or at some angle away from, in many cases, natural function. And looking at it that way, we can sort of motivate clearly that as far as natural function goes, the culture that we have at present is broken. It's broken on purpose, but maybe I don't even want to use the word broken. Maybe I want to use the word, what is the vector angle away from nature, where you could say if it was completely out of sync with nature, the present culture would be going in 180 degrees away from nature. Now, I haven't really thought about that angle long enough to say whether this culture is going 180 degrees away from nature, but it is going away from nature, and we can see it's being, I think it's being more aggressive at this time. I can't really say for sure, but it certainly is destroying forests at a much greater rate. And so that's literally the direction that this culture is going in. And done tonight is I've gotten to another in a series of programs that I started last week, which is sort of a motivation, not of your motivation for why you're turning away from the present culture, but my motivation and my communication of why I'm turning away from the present culture. And I'm just trying to communicate that because maybe your ideas will be similar, or maybe we can talk about your ideas and my ideas if you would like to. And it doesn't really matter what their internal psychology is for driving in the direction that they're driving. It doesn't even matter what their goal is. And literally what matters to me as far as my place in this society is that the first thing I do is that I observe the course of the present stewards, the present holders of power. I observe what they're doing. I observe to as deep a level as I need to how they act, what they do, what their long-term, how many years am I able to look at the land and say, oh, they acted like this. How many, years am I able to look at the society and say, this is how they treat society, defining what I believe to be their social steward. And since I've been putting this in a mathematical form, I'll call it a vector, a direction. And then of equal importance is I go outside of their painted task schedule, portfolio, offering, and I say, do I want to be within what they describe? Do I want to be a contributor to their vector? Do I want to be part of their goal-seeking mission? Or do I want to be something else? And that would be number two, would be my investigation of where I want to go. Who am I? Who is society and who am I? Where are we going? What do we want to do? What do we want to contribute? And then, of course, number three is the all-important comparison and determination of whether there is agreement or whether there is a disagreement, and whether the agreement is slight and we can compromise, or whether the degree of difference is vast, and whether it's on multiple levels, and whether there would be one part of the present society that I could contribute to, and I could say, oh, this is a part of the society that I can fit in, or if I looked at the total global contribution, the total envelope of their vector, as I've been calling it, am I not able to work within their confines, within their offering? And so that's sort of been my process. And I'd just like to say, it's natural to say, to finally say after a certain number of years of life, or maybe you did it earlier, I didn't happen to do it until later, whatever later means, and I don't think time means much of anything to me, so it's not really a later, is it? You can see in a broad sense that it's just very normal for there to be conflict in life, and for there to be, it is healthy to express other viewpoints. It is healthy to say, I am in conflict, and instead of taking that as a massive tragedy and literally, as I said earlier tonight, when you see something that looks so massive and so huge that you would turn away from putting your first step into trying to achieve it because you think you're limited in resources, because you think you're limited in time, instead of looking at it and saying, oh, this is a new long adventure for me to go on, let's get started. It's going to be a bumpy ride. There's going to be unanticipated events. There's going to be anticipated events in conflict. And just being okay with that instead of in a less broadly viewing of the overall psychology of the thing, turning away. And turning away is okay. And you can realize that turning away is okay, and you're going to be back here and not turning away. So that would mean that I've been here before and turned away. And this time, who knows, maybe I will give up and turn away again, but I will put a few more feet down into the effort before maybe psychology or society just takes me over again and I'm not able to, quote-unquote, rebel because maybe I get offered a cushy bed or a nice lifestyle and I'd rather have that, a la the Matrix character who gave in because he wanted his steak and milkshakes or whatever it was. So thank you for listening again to another An Emerging Forest. My name is Alan Ritter, and my email address is RITTER.ALAN88@gmail.com. I run a small produce business in the southeastern Pennsylvania and southern New Jersey area, centered on, at present, the Philadelphia Regional Produce Markets. It can be found, if you're in that area and want to join, at produceclub.us. I also have ancillary groups for anyone to join. They're Produce Club America, but you can send me an email at the RITTER.ALAN88@gmail.com and get more information on that if you'd like to. I encourage everyone, as I always encourage you, to explore your passions, to make time in the week to explore your passions, to put as much effort into taking new opportunities to do things that you feel uncomfortable with. I was certainly very uncomfortable taking this task of being a blog radio host on, but the timing was absolutely perfect because I have something that I want to say. and I have something that I want to explore and that I want to have other people think about and be interested in, or think about and be encouraged to follow their own passions. Even if it's not popular, and even if it's really not popular, it is still your passion. And you might have to do it covertly, and you might not have to talk, you might have to not talk about it with anyone. That's fine. It is your passion. It is part of the overall landscape. It is part of Rumi's out beyond the notions, the social, the society's limitations on your behavior called right doing, and the society's limitations on your behavior called wrongdoing. There's a field, and that field is so big. It contains not only what society even wants you to think about as wrongdoing, it contains so much more fertility that we can't even imagine how big the field is. And that's where I want to go. I want to have those teachers come in. I want to explore the fertility. I want to improve the fertility of the land, of the people, as a result of interacting with the land, so that we can hang out our shingle to the souls that are out there who can't come in, or who are here, can't offer what they need, what they would really like to offer to everyone else as far as skill building, because it's not acceptable, or because they just haven't had the thought available to them because they haven't been able to eat decent food. And the food angle and the land angle and the fertility angle all comes down to why I guess I am in this quote-unquote hobby slash passion slash job, which is the produceclub.us, which is me not changing farming paradigms yet, but just using market arbitrage to get really, really low prices for my customers on organic produce. It was really amazing last week that one of my compatriots and I went to the, not the discount or the seconds market, but the, hey, we're getting rid of this stuff market. And we found 24 count cases of green leaf lettuce, organic green leaf lettuce, for $5. And that's literally pennies, or 18 pounds of organic red grapes for $5, which is less than it's like 30 cents a pound, or 8 pounds of organic strawberries, and they were $2 for the 8 pound case. Now, this isn't because that produce is bad. This piece is because basically there's a conveyor belt and new produce is coming in, so the old produce has to be moved out. Now, the produce does have some age on it, and it needs to be put into people as quickly as possible. And the produce provider is, that's what they're doing. They're basically saying, we would like to take one last chance to not throw this out. Please take this at this essentially free price. So that's what I do every week. Thank you so much for listening to this July 23rd, 2017 program. Have a really great night, and I'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. Join us 7 nights a week for exciting programming covering a variety of expressions of faith. And remember, all manifestations of the divine are equally valid.